Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. Stone, how you doing today?
I am doing well, man. Are you getting fired up? You going to buy some Twitter stock today?
Don't they give it away?
Absolutely.
How's it work?
Yes,
today?
Coming out of 26.
Everybody's in that IPO, right?
I'm serious. Are you going to buy some today? No. Are you going to give it a little while, or you're
I'll
just not going to?
I'll give it a little while.
Not going to play at all.
I'll give it a while.
Yeah. So what would happen if we'd have done Facebook? Anybody check those numbers?
It's probably up now.
Right, exactly. Buy low, sell high. How complicated can this get?
You know, we're not allowed to give stock tips.
All right, I guess we'll get back to the core business here at Business Radio X, which is having compelling conversations with passionate business individuals. This is going to be a fun segment. A little bit later in the program, we are going to hear from the gentleman with Pragmetrics, Mark Fonseca, or Fonseca. I'm getting the nod on the second pronunciation, and Mike McCarthy. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the Grand Poobah, the person running things over at Attentively. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Miss Roz Lemure.
Thank you, Stone. Very happy to be here.
Well, wait, before we do it, how did I do on the last name?
You did well.
All right.
Like
it's a tough
80%?
Last name.
It wasn't 100%.
I'm going to give it like 95.
Yeah. It's got to be like a little more of an arrogant tone to the end of it. Is that?
It's an sound. All right. For what it's worth, my full name is Rosalind Lemure, and I actually shortened my first name to Roz.
She was trying to help.
Well, thanks for trying to help.
To get people to pass the first hurdle.
All right. So give us a little bit of a feel for what you're out there trying to do for folks with this business.
Sure. So Attentively is a SaaS marketing platform. We are out to end spam and get marketers the tools to send the right message to the right person at the right time.
And then what are the tools you use?
So fundamentally what we do is we start with your existing customer base or your email opt-in list, whoever's in your, you know, database.
So people who like you.
People
right?
who like you. They've
right
already
now. Not strangers.
Have, not
These
strangers.
These are people that already know you.
Mm-hmm. They have some association with you already. We do a social media match to over 100 social networks. We find out some demographic information like age, gender, and clout score. And then we start listening to them. What are they talking about when they're online on social media, especially Twitter and Facebook? And then what's different about our platform, because there are other listening platforms out mm-hmm. there, what's different is that we close the loop and we then give you the tools to do something with that data, specifically to trigger real-time marketing based on what people are talking about. So if I'm out there saying, hey, I'm going to go, I'm going to South by Southwest this year, and I'm on, say, Travelocity's list, they're going to send me some Austin, you know, car deals and hotel deals.
Right. Now, who is your typical client? Is it a retailer, or like what type of company would use this service?
We've basically got two segments of customers right now. We have on the commercial side, it's really kind of an interesting mix. You know, it's e-commerce, so folks selling. And the reason it's e-commerce is because they have the email addresses, they have a lot
right.
of contact info, and they're driving people to sales through. Online communication. So that's mm-hmm. a very nice fit. So some folks doing clothing sales, for example, or gifts. You know,
so could it be like a big e-commerce company, or it could be just an individual who has a boutique that also uses e-commerce?
We sort of work better at scale. So our smallest customers have maybe 10,000 people in their database. Our mm-hmm. largest have 2 million. Mm-hmm. You know, and we've even been talking to some folks that have, you know, 30, 50 million individuals.
So it's not like the pizza joint?
No, to be honest, it's really not so much a small business tool mm-hmm. as a mid-sized to large business tool. Mm-hmm. I mentioned we have two segments. The other segment is really nonprofit organizations. This company was born out of an agency, a digital agency that does strategy, web development, that works primarily with nonprofit organizations or large national ones like, you know, Greenpeace and One Campaign and those type of orgs.
Yeah, tell us more about that. What's your backstory? How did you get on this path?
How did I end up here? So I've actually worked in political technology prior to this for about the 13 years before I started Attentively. I worked for different nonprofit organizations doing very large scale advocacy, primarily using email at the time as a means to get people to do stuff offline, was part of sort of sea change in how that work was done around 2003. I was the executive director of a training institute called New Organizing Institute, and basically campaigners came through there that would then go work on political campaigns or with advocacy orgs. Then we started the agency, and then out of that was born Attentively.
Now, talk about the path towards nonprofits and how they can leverage this, because when their product is more of kind of this feel-good, do-good kind of experience, is that the same strategy for that a business would use when they're trying to engage with a customer to get them to buy something?
Yeah, actually, it's not as different as you might think, and it's really those two streams are really coming together. So it's very exciting for nonprofits in that over the last 10 years, this sort of typical means of organizing for, you know, a modern nonprofit has been build a huge email list, send a blast to them every single day.
Right, and guilt them into donating something. Right.
Yeah, and hope that like 5% of those people respond.
Is that what they shoot for? Is that really like that?
Honestly, the open rates are typically around 14%, and so the conversion is a fraction of that. So yeah, the conversion rates are not amazing on these huge lists.
Wow.
Obviously, every organization's different. You know, some do much better. But most don't. And I think that's really tragic, because the people that are on that list are people that already have said, I care about
this. I know a little bit, right? Just get on the list.
Right? So, you know, what we're trying to bring to the table here is instead of blasting people the same thing every day and they just zone out, you know, I might care about something, but I don't care about getting some generic message every day.
Right.
So it's about listening to what they're talking about online. Look for that right moment when they're out there talking about, oh my gosh, I just can't believe, you know, the tragedy of, you know, all the abandoned cats on my street,
right.
You know, whatever it is. And then Humane Society, boom, we fixed that, you know, and being able to reach out to people at the right moment.
But how do you kind of sit in that spot where you're listening, but you're not being creepy?
I get that question every time. And I think it's such a funny question, because do you have any idea how much data people have, marketers, and have on you?
Well, I know, like, you intellectually know that,
yeah.
But then all of a sudden, when you start seeing it happen in real time, it starts.
So
it's a comfort level. I guess yeah. Today's generation is more comfortable with this than maybe the older generation.
The Toronto mayor's not so comfortable with the data being revealed about him at the moment.
Yeah, it's funny, because there is, I mean, that Toronto situation aside, there are cultural differences. We actually were just talking with a partner in Canada yesterday, and I think there is a little bit of a difference in their tolerance level for, you know, data being consumed by marketers.
But, and I guess expectations of privacy and expectations of engagement.
But at the same time, you know, what we're listening to is all public data. People are putting this out there. I think the consumer is shifting, and that they're getting much more conscious of, here's something I'm making public, here's something I'm not making public.
Right.
And then they're expecting over time for companies to send them less spammy stuff, more directed messaging.
But like, how about if you're on your Twitter and you're like, my car, my blank car, I'm not going to use the brand, is terrible. I hate it. And then, like, a minute later, this other car company is like, you know what? You might want to consider this other car and come by for a test drive. Like, is that creepy or is that acceptable?
I think that probably crosses the line. And, you know, obviously every product, every organization is different. And you have to consider the math of what is your relationship to that person is also complicated, right? So one of the things that we do is that we time the messages, not exactly right after someone says something.
But you would know right after, right?
Yeah, we would know right after someone said something. So, you know, for example, and it kind of depends what channel. So you can do multi-channel communication through our tool. So if someone says something on Twitter, you can follow them on Twitter, you could DM them, and you could email them all automatically through our system.
So even though that I don't have a relationship with somebody and they mention something that's important to me, you can make me aware of that.
Well, with our tool, you're always starting with the base that's in your existing database.
Okay.
So that's different than, you know, people here listening, they might think about like a Radian 6 or there's a bunch of different tools out there that do basically keyword searches across the social web.
To strangers.
Know. Yeah.
Right.
But you're listening to your own customer base or your own supporter
that's
base.
That's what Attentively is focused on, people you already know and how to engage with them more often and
more
create deeper relationships because of your better listening.
Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it's not even necessarily more frequently, but you know, you have to communicate frequently if you're only getting 5% response. You can communicate less frequently if you're getting, you know, 30 or 50 or 70% response.
Which is 70% possible?
In fact, I almost hesitate to share this because people don't believe it. We have, in fact, had cases where our customers have gotten 100% response on an ask.
Every single person.
Every single person.
So they had
yes.
like six people on their list?
No, that was, so this is, I'm going to give you the real numbers so that there's, you know, so they started with 1 million people on their list and they boiled it down to, I think it was around 150. And they were people that were, you know, they pulled off their list based on clout score, previous participation, this was a nonprofit, previous participation on a similar topic, and they were out there actively on their own time talking about that issue. And so they asked them.
So these are super fans.
Super fans, very powerful people online, 150 influencers that have, you know, thousands of followers there themselves that can reach a very large audience.
Right.
So they asked all those people to change their Twitter avatar or Facebook picture and to post on Twitter or Facebook every single day for a week. So it was a very high ask.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Is this freaking you out even just a little bit, Lee? I mean, I'm fascinated, but here's the picture I'm painting. So Mark and Mike come in the show today. They have a good time. We talk about their business, and then they go back and they start listening to some other shows. And then let's say they start listening to a lot of shows on startups. And if I've got your, I guess it's like a dashboard or something, where I see this Mark and Mike, these guys are really interested in startups. Now I can start gauging my ongoing conversation to, hey, here's some more startup shows, or maybe you guys want to underwrite a startup show, or
is that true?
That's powerful.
That's how they would use it, right?
Yeah, and in fact, on that last item, I mean, not to creep you out further, but you can you can combine it with other commercial data. We have been in discussion with a potential partner that specifically deals in wealth data, and that's something that a lot of fundraisers.
Well, Mark's loaded. I can tell you that just by looking at the way he dresses.
This is nice jacket. You know, but when you can't see the lovely deck, you can look in their profile and say, you know, what you can do with our tool is you don't have to message someone right away. You can actually use our automations to put them on a list segment. So you can listen to your whole network and say, over time, I'm going to build up. I know I'm going to be doing something on startups. I'm not ready yet.
Right, like down the road. So I can just start putting them in a pile.
Yep.
That when they start doing these certain activities or seeing certain behaviors, I'm just like, okay, I'll throw him in this pile, this pile, this pile. Okay, now I'm ready to now communicate with that pile that I've kind of put together.
Yep. And exactly. And then, you know, whatever other information you have based on, you know, your previous relationship with that person, et cetera, you can customize those messages when the time comes.
Now, the channels that you utilize, if channel's the right word, I don't know, but like Twitter, Facebook, is LinkedIn one?
Yeah. So what we do is, we do match to 108 social networks initially, so we have all the LinkedIn info for people. We match about a 60% match rate. So let's say there's 100,000 people in your database, we would find about 60,000 of them online. A fraction of those we would have found LinkedIn profiles for. The listening component right now is just Twitter and Facebook. Mm-hmm. We're poised to add other networks into that, but right now it's just Twitter and Facebook. But you could search for people and you know, you can get that LinkedIn info in our system. You're just not, you know, listening to their LinkedIn posts.
So the only posts you're listening to are Facebook and Twitter.
And just the public ones, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so how does the sales and marketing side of this thing work for you? How do you go out and get your customers? I guess you're eating some of your own cooking, right?
Yeah, I mean, we call it attentively for attentively.
Well, that's probably how you sell it, right? You know, this is how we found you. Look, work like this.
Right, just do
this conversation.
That's part of it. Although, interestingly, I mean, it's very much more suited to a B2C business. Mm-hmm. So we are a B2B that serves the B2C. And so it is useful to a certain extent, but to another extent, we do a lot of inside sales, you know, like we do the heavy lifting like other B2Bs. We create lead lists. We make a lot of phone calls. You know, we do a lot of demos.
So when you would actually make a phone call to explain this online service?
A lot of it happens. So if this makes it any better over like Skype or Hangouts, we use Join Me a lot. So,
but how do you make that initial conversation where they're even interested in having that call? Do you email them to say, hey, we have this thing that might serve you?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you reach out to Twitter?
For the most part, our initial outreach is email. Mm-hmm. But we do, you know, when we come up with a lead list, we'll throw them in our system too.
Right, so that way you can kind of
to see if anyone's saying anything. That's a really good hook for us to get in touch
now,
with.
Now, what was the first client? Like, how did you move from nonprofit to enterprise?
Yeah.
Or if you don't want to say the name, but just like when you were making that move and you were saying, you know what, let's go after businesses, not just nonprofits, yeah. What was the initial way you go to market the same that you had done with nonprofit, or was it kind of just an organic thing where the nonprofit's like, hey, one of our donors has a business, can this work for him?
The strategies are a bit different. So when we split off this new company from the agency, we from the beginning intended for this to be both a commercial and nonprofit mm-hmm. product. It was one of the reasons why we split off a new company. And that said, our network, because we'd been in that field for 15 years each, you know, we had a lot of nonprofits. So, you know, our first 70 paying customers.
So you practiced on nonprofits?
No, I mean, it really is such a good fit for them. It was an effort for us to say, you know what, we've got, you know, there's a much bigger market here. Let's figure out how to crack that. So, you know, we brought in some other folks to the team who, you know, did more commercial marketing, commercial sales that helped us kind of break into that. To be honest, the initial actual sales came in through partners. We do, like I said, we do a lot of inside sales. The other big source of sales for us is partnerships.
What's an example of a partnership?
We have really two kinds. There's referral partnerships through agencies.
Like ad agencies?
Yeah, like PR agencies, digital agencies. Anybody that's doing social media strategy for companies. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of a nice, easy win for them. Our price point is not particularly high. You know, for some of these agencies that have, you know, $10,000, $15,000 a month retainers with, you know, this is like nothing. You know, they don't even have to mention it to the client.
It's just like a value add.
It's just a value add. And then one of the things about our product is that it produces some very tangible data, some nice charts, some pretty infographic-y type stuff that they can just, you know, throw in a report.
Right.
So it sounds to me like this could be really cool, particularly up front. And then I wonder if all that data doesn't get a little bit overwhelming for like a
newbie. That's why the infographics are important.
Right. Exactly. So what kind of guidance do either you provide or do you hook us up with a partner to help us figure out a strategy to leverage this access and information that we've got going forward?
Yeah, the partnerships are great for that. Like if they're working through an agency, we'll work with the agency to help come up with a strategy for them. But there's a couple of things that we've built into the software specifically to address that. Because we have found that is an issue both on the commercial and nonprofit side. Everyone says, oh, we want big data, but once they get it,
not that
like,
big.
Oh my God.
Now what do I do with all this big data?
For one thing, we send personalized recommendations every day to everyone who has a user account based on what's happening on their list.
And what's an example of a recommendation?
So a recommendation would say, here are, you know, three or four influential people on your list that you're not following yet on Twitter. You should follow them. And then there's one click and they actually follow like, I think, 25 at a time. Another thing would be...
Is that a good strategy that a business should be doing is just regularly following people?
Yeah, I mean, there's a real change in how I think marketers are thinking about marketing these days. In a lot of cases, where there's this term engagement marketing, where you know there's an understanding that people want to be part of building the brand, they want to be in communication, they want to be sort of part of the conversation, and I think that's a good signifier for companies to start following folks and start engaging with them, watching for opportunities to be responsive online. So that's just like one little thing they can
but
do.
Is there a ratio? Because like some of the most influential people barely follow anybody, but they're being followed by lots of people, you know?
Yeah, there's a whole middle tier, you know, that very top tier, a lot of them don't follow, they hardly follow anyone back. But on a given list, most of the people who turn up as, quote, influencers on our customer list are bloggers, journalists, people who are just, you know, that's part of their lifestyle,
right,
is to be engaged online.
But should you have a ratio of if I have 10,000 followers, then I should follow 10,000 people? Or
for a business, I don't think it matters that much. You know, other people might disagree with me. I don't think that's really important, other than you don't want to get way ahead of the number of people that are following you very quickly because there are rules against that on Twitter. So mm-hmm. they'll slow you down anyway.
Is there a rule of number of tweets?
There's some sort of rate limiting, but you'd have to be sending a bunch of automated tweets or have a team of, you know, 50 tweeting for you.
Right.
That's not something you would run into with our mm-hmm. product. To the recommendations, I don't want to just leave it at Twitter because people think that's, you know, it's more that. So it's, you know, follow these people. Here's the topic that's trending today. You know, people are talking about the Super Bowl or they're talking about the Sebelius thing or, you know, you get a sense of what's on people's minds and different lists are really quite different. And then we'll tell you, you set up what are basically saved searches. We call them watch terms. So to go to your car company example that you gave earlier, if you're looking, you say you're going to roll out a hybrid. So you're looking for people talking about, you know, hybrids or even climate change or the environment. Mm-hmm. And then you can find those. We'll push those as a recommendation to your inbox as well, saying, hey, you know what? This has spiked as a topic on your list. Go participate in that conversation. We make it very easy to respond to all them at once.
Now, so, I want to walk through like an actual example. So let's say we have the nonprofit Save Stone Foundation. Mm-hmm. And so I reach out and you guys come out and talk to me and walk me through. Or do I just go on the web and fill out stuff and it's kind of plug and play? Or is it anything in
between? Yeah, is it intuitive that I could figure this out without being kind of social media savvy?
Oh, yeah. It's very intuitive. That said, we do our sales process is basically like a B2B. We figured out that we have made it very simple. And originally we rolled it out as completely self-serve. And then we realized, you know, this is one of those like startup lessons. We realized we're selling to organizations, we're selling to businesses. That's not how the sales process works. You know, in most businesses, they expect to be on the phone with you. So usually what we do is you say, I'm interested. We'll hop on the phone. We'll do a demo. We'll help you get set up. But the actual things you're doing are really simple, like click on the picture of your CRM and then put in your username and password for your CRM and then pick the list
like
you want.
It's pull very like a Salesforce, like you can pull all the Salesforce data?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we don't. Salesforce is one we haven't rolled out yet, although that will be in the next quarter. We have integrations with 5 or 6 CRMs so far, including MailChimp. MailChimp, local company, has been really amazing to work with.
So did they help you in like when they were a partner of yours?
Mm-hmm.
So now when you went in partnership with them, did they help you improve your product by being a good partner?
Yeah, actually. So we've done sort of 2 rounds of partnership with them. The first was a CRM, or basically an integration with them for their
email
users, where we're listed in their marketplace. So if you're a MailChimp user, you can just go to MailChimp Marketplace off their navigation and search for us over in there. So the partnership on their end was they put us in their marketplace. They helped us promote the integration. We used their API, which is an excellent API,
mm-hmm.
Integrated. So basically you can go into our system, click on the MailChimp icon, pull in your list, and then it'll sync with them. And then the other thing, they have another product that people don't know about as much called Mandrill, which is transactional email. So that means, you know, where MailChimp, you have a big old list, you send a message to that whole list. Mandrill is much more for that kind of email we were talking about earlier where, you know, I mention, you know, going to South by Southwest and then you send me a personalized email about, you know, you want to rent a car at Hertz while you're there.
Right.
So we just actually yesterday rolled out.
It's fresh.
It's fresh. Hot off the presses. So we rolled out this suite of features called automations. And they actually use Mandrill for that email send. And this is, you know, the second part of our answer to how do you make this easy day to day, how do you make this big data actionable, is we work with all of our clients to set up these automations. So, you know, we figure out if this, you know, if you want to be promoting this car rentals, let's figure out what are the words, you know, from your customers that are going to trigger a particular promotion and then set that up in the system and then it just runs.
Oh, so at that point, once you do the kind of upfront stuff, then it just works in the background?
Yep. So you continue to generate sales, or if you're a nonprofit, continue to generate donations in the background, really without you having to do anything day to day. At, you know, 3, 5, whatever X your normal response rates, they're much, much, much higher response rates.
Mm-hmm. So now there's a lot of, it seems there's several sales automation software-y companies here in town. Mm-hmm. Like Pardot is pretty large here in town. Do you guys work with them? What's your, is there a relationship between you guys and them?
There is not a relationship yet, although once we integrate with Salesforce, then there'll be a sort of de facto relationship. We're actually very focused right now on playing nice and integrating with marketing automation tools. We actually just were at the Eloqua experience last week or week before now, rolling out our App Cloud integration with Eloqua. So basically what that means is, you know, instead of the kind of integrations we've been doing where we make it easy to pull your data over into our system, we're going to live in that system. So if you're an Eloqua user, you can actually, you know, log into Eloqua. Eloqua is kind of similar to Pardot in the sense that it's a marketing automation tool. You basically go in there and so marketing automation tools, I know that's not a completely common term. Let me explain that for 1 second. Marketing automation means you're watching what people are doing on your website, and then you're sending them personalized communications based on that. And so what we're doing is very compatible in the sense that we're just saying that lens should be much bigger. You know, maybe they're going to be on your website for a couple of minutes. They're on Twitter and Facebook for 15 hours a week.
Right. So then you can integrate both of them together and get more data.
Exactly. So now within Eloqua, you're going to be able to say, you know, not only based on what someone's doing on my website, but what they're doing when they're off my website, I can now trigger all kinds of list segmentation, prospect scoring.
So they're scoring campaigns, like what their behaviors are on the website. Like, oh, they went over on to this page and that's worth 100, and they going over here, that's worth 1,000 because they might be ready to buy something. And then you can layer in your stuff on Twitter and they mention these keywords and maybe that's worth 500. And
But couldn't that could even trigger old school sales activity too, right?
Oh, yeah.
If they hit a certain threshold, then it's time to get Bob
somebody
on
better
the phone
call
them.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's something you can do within our tool, and certainly you can do within a tool like Eloqua or Pardot. You can, in our tool, say, instead of responding to that customer, I'm going to email someone on our team.
Right. Wow, that's awesome. This must be so much fun for you right now. It seems like you're really exploding.
I'm pretty excited, especially about this automations feature that we rolled out yesterday. We've been sort of working up to it for a while.
Right.
You know, and at the Eloqua experience, it was fun talking to really a room of people that, you know, this is what they do. They're really
into
this marketing automation thing.
And this is all they're thinking 24/7, right.
You know, and this is something new, and no one has done it yet. And there's some big companies really trying to crack this code.
Right.
And Salesforce is obviously one. Oracle is kind of their big, you know, giant mortal enemy, and they're trying to figure it out on the other side. We're trying to play nice with everybody.
You know? You're everybody's friend, right?
We're way too small to fight with either of those people.
So I'm still a little freaked out. I'm not going to lie about it. But to me, this is very intriguing. I think you and I might be a little more ready for big data. You mentioned Oracle. We went out and did remote broadcast at Oracle Open World in San Francisco several weeks ago. And, you know, that term was thrown around a lot. And but, I mean, there's ways that we can leverage big data just in our everyday business if we're not too scared to do it. So what does the future hold, or do I even want to know, for this whole engagement, marketing, big data capture
thing? Right, are you
thingy?
Still pursuing nonprofits, or are you focused now more on enterprise, or both?
Both.
It's an and thing, not an or thing?
It's an and thing, not an or thing. I will answer that question too, but yeah, so I think it's a wonderful tool for nonprofits. Ultimately, you know, the market, the commercial market's much bigger.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the vision for the company is that we're able to continue to support nonprofits at a reasonable price point, you know, and we grow into supporting a much broader commercial base. And ultimately, they have different needs, both in terms of, you know, the service side of it and the data side of it.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to have to make as many phone calls going forward. I think this is exciting stuff. I think people are going to start calling you more.
That's what you're shooting for, right?
Right. That is what we're shooting for.
But you do have to build a really strong relationship with these clients, because they're trusting you with such an important part of their. I mean, their relationship, as technical as the world is getting, relationship is still so important in it.
Yeah, and actually, the initial data that we're starting with is sort of the technical representation of that trust and that relationship. And right. so a lot of, especially when dealing with larger commercial customers, the first question they have is data security. You know, we're going to give you access to our customer database. That is not an
sure. Yeah, help yourself.
Just plug in your username.
Got a flash drive? No problem.
So that's not an easy hurdle to get over. And the same thing with the large nonprofits. I mean, they do not play fast and loose with these big databases.
Mm, right.
So, you know, we've had to do a lot to ensure that data security and make people comfortable with us as part of that relationship building as part of the sales process.
So where can our listeners go to learn more?
It's attentive.ly. I know people are used to the .com. It's not a .com. It's attentive.ly.
All right. Well, it has been an absolute pleasure having you in the studio. Keep up the good work and keep us posted. In fact, we ought to have you back. Maybe give us an update several weeks or a couple months from now. Or it might be fun if you have local clients, right? Do you have any local clients?
I'm trying to think if
we will by the time we talk.
Will.
All right, so
I'm so geography disconnected. Our team, you know,
but no. What I was going to suggest is that could be fun to bring a client in and just talk about that whole relationship and how it unfolded. I think you'd be up for that, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds like fun.
All right. Hey, you going to hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, we have with us from Pragmetrics, Mr. Mike McCarthy and Mark Fonseca. How you guys doing?
Great. How are you?
Doing great.
Well, welcome to the show. Did you learn anything out of that one, Mike?
I would say I think the key there that Rods was saying and you were commenting on is at the end of the day, it's all dependent on the relationship. And everything we do in our business is geared towards deepening that relationship with the customer, but in a very different way. So we'll tell you about that.
Yeah, give us a little bit of a backdrop. Mission, purpose, what you're out there trying to do for folks.
Well, our business came about, we started this business about 3 years ago. Mark and I came together, and we each have separate businesses as well. So I have a kind of a mechanical maintenance business for heavy machinery, and Mark is a men's image consultant. And what happened about 3 years ago in my business was I lost a key client. And I was totally shocked by it because I had just had lunch with this key client, asked them how we were doing. He said, you guys are doing great. I said, is there anything else we can do to improve the service? He said, no, everything is great. Just keep doing what you're doing. And I found out that afternoon that they had switched to using my competitor.
Uh-huh. Don't go to that restaurant anymore.
Right. So now since then, we've won that client back. But the lesson that was learned there for me was that I thought I was getting the truth from my customer in how we were doing. And in fact, I was not. So I called Mark, who has a very strong background in sales and in relationship building, to get his advice on how to go about addressing this issue, because I felt, well, maybe the problem is that I don't have the skills to get the information from my client. And he pointed out two things. The first was that it really wasn't a skill set issue. It was the fact that because I was already in a relationship with that customer, he didn't want to give me the bad news. And so this was kind of a light bulb for me, because then it began to sort of, I felt, how do I know how the other relationships are, even though I felt we were doing quite well? So it really kind of shook my confidence in the methods I was using to ensure customer loyalty, because we've built our business over the years. We've been in business in that business for about 10 years, and we have built it based on loyalty and word-of-mouth referrals. So this really kind of shook my confidence.
Right. If you can't ask them how you're doing and them not tell you the truth, that's kind of tricky now, huh?
Exactly.
You've got to pick up cues from other areas.
Exactly. Well, so the first thing that Mark pointed out to me was that you're going to be a lot more effective if you have a third party talk to your customers to find out how you're doing. Because in that case, they're not in any relationship with the third party, and they'll be more open. So the first step I took was I said, okay, Mark, I want you to go and talk to my clients. But I want to see if there's a system we can put behind that to make sure we have a process, that it's not just a conversation and then what do you do with the information. So I did some research. I had worked in the corporate world for years, a lot of time with GE and another 5 years or so with Siemens running businesses. Went back, looked at a lot of stuff we had done with voice of the customer and to see where that had gone. And it turns out that there's a system now in place that has been developed by Bain & Company, the big management consulting firm, which surprisingly is not that well known of, but is incredibly successful. And so what we did was we implemented that system in my business with tremendous success, transformed how we run the business. And it was so successful that I said to Mark, we need to start helping other companies do this. And so that's what Pragmetrics is about. So essentially what we do now is we help CEOs make their business into the loyalty leaders of their industry, right? Because the evidence is clear and the data is there to prove it, that loyalty leaders grow at more than twice the average rate of their competitors. And there's all kinds of examples we can talk about, companies like Costco, companies like Chick-fil-A, Enterprise Rent-A-Car, who are leaders in their industry through implementing this type of a system. And so what we should talk about here as we get into this is how that system works, because it's very different. It's essentially, it has almost nothing to do with marketing and sales. It's all to do with operations. And what I did in my...
You don't just give them one of those little cards with the holes
how
that you
punch? How we doing?
No.
How we doing
card? That's not the
no,
answer.
There's a lot more to it. The beauty of this system is it's very simple in concept, but it's not easy. That's the difficulty of it. That's the challenge of it. But what I did in my business was, I was so kind of shaken by this loss of the key account was... and, of course, I was doing all the usual things of sales and marketing initiatives to try to grow the business. And I decided, well, if I can't be certain of the retention of existing accounts, then why am I wasting my time on trying to bring in new customers? And so I essentially stopped all marketing and sales for a year in the business and focused entirely on implementing the system in the business, focused on improving the customer experience.
That's a heck of a commitment.
Yep.
You
right.
went all in on that.
We
now,
did it.
But
we,
when you were doing this, were you doing it through this third party?
Well, what I did was I had Mark talk to my clients. And it was very revealing. He did find out.
So Mark just calls him, hey, I'm Mark?
No, let me, yeah, so let me explain how this works. This is, and I should say that the system that's been developed by Bain, it's called the Net Promoter System. As I say, it's surprisingly not that well known, but it's incredibly effective for any business. And so what I did was I had Mark go talk to my clients.
But
and
walk us through, like, mm-hmm. how does that happen? Do
okay.
you say, hey,
so,
client,
no. yes.
Mark's going to call
do.
You?
What I did was I went to my top, we use the 80-20 rule. So I identified that the 20% of my customers, as almost always the case for almost any business that we work with, we find this rule to be true. Identify the 20% of my customers that represent 80% of my business. And then I called them and I said, hey, I would like you to speak to this third-party person. I want you to be totally honest. You can remain anonymous if you wish, but I want your unvarnished feedback. I want the good, the bad, and the ugly. What we're doing well, what could we do to improve? And you will not hurt my feelings. Will you talk to Mark? They said, absolutely, no problem. And we were talking earlier about the response rate to email blasts or to surveys. Typically, it's under 20%. Very often, especially in customer satisfaction surveys, it's less than 10%. The response rate when you do this system is over 90%. And when we do it for our clients and you set it up that way where the CEO goes to his clients and says, I would like you to speak to Pragmetrics and be totally honest with them. You can remain anonymous. We then follow in with the phone call, and it is over 90% in every case of the people will speak to us. And the interesting thing about those conversations is sometimes, again, you know, companies are slow to open up their customer database to you. And the first thing they ask us is, well, how long are you going to tie up my customer for? And we say, typically 5 minutes, unless they want to speak longer. And the average conversation is 17 minutes. Because once Mark starts asking them the questions, they do want to share, and it's very positive. Even if they have a negative experience, they're generally very positive towards making suggestions on how to improve that experience.
So now, well, when they're talking, when this third party is calling the customer, they can't be that front of and say, how are they doing, right? Don't they right. have to kind of ask around it mm-hmm. to kind of...
Well, that's...
kind of tease out the real
morphology.
Truth, you know?
Exactly.
Right?
Well, that is the beauty of the system developed by Bain. The opening question is always the same, and it's called, and we've all seen this question, it's called a likely to recommend question. So Mark starts off the conversation where he'll say he's Mark from Pragmetrics, following up on the call from the CEO, is that person available to take the call? They say yes, and the conversation starts. So Mark asks that question. So on a scale of 0 to 10, with 0 being highly unlikely and 10 being highly likely, how likely would you be to recommend the company to a friend or a colleague? And they will come back with a score, anywhere from 0 to 10. Let's say it's a 7. Then Mark says, so what is ABC Company doing to earn a 7? And then the conversation starts. And then it is, what could they do to earn a 10? And then more information comes out. And so that is the whole basis of the system, are those two questions. And the interesting thing about that question, just to give you a quick background on why that is so powerful, the research shows that that is the only question that consistently ties to future customer behavior. Because when we're talking about loyalty, what we want is the behavior of three things. One is they'll continue to buy from you. Two is they'll buy more from you. And three is they will in an unsolicited way, refer you to their friends or colleagues.
So the question is more about how referable are you or some variation of that, not have you ever referred. So like
Correct.
You don't care about if they've ever referred, but if they feel like they would in the future refer?
That's right.
Correct.
And so you don't care about their actual behavior. You care about how they perceive the relationship.
Correct. And what you'll find is that the people that score you a 9 and a 10, unless they score you a 9 or a 10, then they're not getting the experience that you want them to have. If they give you a 9 or a 10, they're already referring you.
But like you would know if they're referring you, right?
Or
you
not necessarily.
Know. Not necessarily, yeah. I mean, that's the this thing that's is so highly nuanced, but the research shows that, as Mark says, unless it's a 9 or 10. Now, sometimes a customer will say, I don't give 9s or 10s, I'll give them an 8. And what we found is that's not true. We all give 9s or 10s if we've had an experience that triggers not just the rational but the emotional connection with the company. Mm-hmm. And the evidence also is there, this is very frightening, is that if you score up to an 8, which means you're satisfied and even very satisfied, the defection rate of very satisfied customers is the same as the defection rate of unsatisfied customers because the bar is too low in order to trigger loyalty, and that's where you have to get a 9 or a 10. And if it's a 9 or a 10, Bain considers those to be promoters of your business. If it's a 7 or an 8, they're passives. They're basically bored. They're satisfied, but they're bored. But if something better comes along, they'll leave.
So there's a chance they would leave if they're under 9.
Correct.
But if they're 9 or 10, you've got them for a while.
Correct.
You've got them. And so you want that score. And so the score that they've come up with is called the Net Promoter Score, and it is the best indicator now of true loyalty of a business. It's accepted as the best measure, and that's what we really liked about it, is there's a true number that you can look at. The calculation for that number for your business is the percentage of promoters minus the percentage of detractors. So you take all the 9s and 10s, and you take that percentage of the total, and then you take the 0 to 6s and that percentage, and you subtract the two numbers, and that is your net promoter score. So now you have a number that you can use to benchmark yourself against other businesses, mm-hmm. and what you find is that the companies that consistently show the highest loyalty and the highest growth rates have very high net promoter scores, typically above 70%. But the average net promoter score for U.S. companies is 10%. And the score can range from minus 100% to plus 100%. And we've worked with companies where when we go out and do it, we've had one company with negative 30%.
All right, but now we've got – I realize that we're using a little quantitative data collection to really open the conversation and create a platform for dialogue, but you're collecting a mountain of qualitative data, talking back to our big data discussion. Now, you've got to wade through it. The client has to wade through it, got to decide what to do about it because – Right. I mean, now you've got all of this dialogue for all kinds of ideas about what you could do to earn a 9 from me, right? So speak to that a little bit, Mark.
Yeah, basically what we do is we take all the information from the call, and then we call the verbatims, and then we'll put them in a report.
So like you transcribe it?
Correct. We transcribe the voice-to-text transcribing process. We collect – we don't miss anything on the call.
Right. So it's 17 minutes about –
Right.
You have 17 minutes of verbal content, and if they're mentioning words, like you can do kind of word cloud and see what keywords that are bubbling up, right? There's lots of ways to cull that data once you have it digitized.
Correct. So we'll put that in a report, and it's a world-class report that we give to the CEO, and then we have out of that information we put the positive themes, the negative themes, the wish lists. One of the questions I'll ask, if a customer gives you a 10, then I'll say, well, let me ask you if you could take a magic wand and ask for anything to get to a 12 or even above, what would that be? So they started thinking about that. And one of the things I found out for Mike was one of the customers said, well, you know, while he's out there fixing my hose, if he could also change the oil, air, and gas filter while he's in the machine, that would be outstanding to get to a 12. So the next customer that gave, you know, gave him a 10, I said, let me ask you a question. If he could change these three filters while he's in there, and they said, wow, that would be outstanding. So the next six customers all thought it was a great idea. Mike had no idea. Right. Now when he goes out to fix these hoses, he's carrying filters on his van, and he just continually distances himself and builds that moat around his business from his competitors.
So now, how is it possible if, like, you're going only to the 20% of the companies that give you 80% of the business, how do you get, like, a zero? Like, how do the, if they're giving you so much, you know, how are they also saying they don't like you
in
the same breath?
Yeah, exactly.
They're buying your stuff at a high rate and saying they don't like you?
Right. Well, it could be one company we worked with. It's a legacy issue. They have, it's like a government contract. They have to buy from these people. They don't like buying from them, but it's too much brain damage to change. Like with your bank. If you've got four or five accounts with your bank, and you don't like your bank, then
the pain to leave is worse than the pain of staying. Sticking with them.
Correct.
And so you see that?
We do see that.
Wow, that's scary.
And what's interesting is a lot of the people, when you allow, you know, the tagline of our business is the truth will set you free. When you talk to the people that are the 0 to 6, they always want to remain anonymous. They don't want to know. They don't want to give you the bad news, right? So it really works out, and the people who are giving you 9s or 10s are the ones. Oh, sure, use my name. I love XYZ.
I'm proud of the relationship.
Correct. Right. And a lot of times, I hear when you're actually talking to people on the phone, you get information that you can't get from a survey, an email survey. You know, I'm listening to inflections in their voice.
So you're making note of that?
They'll do a pregnant pause, and I'll say, well, you know what? Let's go back to that.
You have to be a good facilitator. This can't just be like somebody that's just banging out questions, right?
Yeah, you're not. This isn't some call center. These are in-depth interviews that you're – and a lot of times I called one customer recently, and I said, would you like to use your name or remain anonymous? She said, well, use my name. That's fine. 5 minutes later, she called me back. She goes, no, Mark, I just realized I've told you things that I haven't even told the CEO yet, so why don't we just don't use my name?
Right.
And, you know, a lot of times I feel like a bartender or people really want to talk. When you just engaging us and letting your customers know you're going to complete this exercise, the loyalty factor goes up because they automatically know that you care enough to ask them what they're thinking and how they feel about your business.
Well, I love that it's structured methodology. On the face of it, it's not very complicated at all. It's a couple of well-placed initial questions. Then you've got someone with the skills and depth of a Mark that's continuing to draw out all this qualitative data. I would think this would be very attractive to a lot of companies. I'll ask you the same question I asked our first guest today. The sales and marketing side of it, your phone ringing a lot? Are you out there shaking trees? Or how do you? Because it seems to me if they have this conversation, they're
probably
going to
want to do something. Right? They're afraid to ask these questions.
Yeah, you know, interesting.
That's a good point.
We belong to Vistage, and most of our business comes from Vistage. We do a lot of lunch and learns. So if we're talking to CEOs, and once we make this presentation, I mean, our hit rate is great.
Right.
Once you get to have this conversation, then we're happy.
CEOs,
And we speak to Vistage. That's really how we get our business, is through speaking.
How you get it.
Because you have to kind of walk the journey of how, you know, and I start with the most striking statistic is what we call the perception gap, which was what I was suffering from when I lost that account several years ago. And the perception gap is that 80% of CEOs believe that their companies provide a superior customer experience. Only 8% of their customers agree. And this is where the gap arises, right? Now, I should say the thing...
Roz just fell out of her chair.
Right. I mean, so that's... And most CEOs kind of live in this bubble where, you know, all of their people feed them the good news.
Right,
I mean,
and everything's
I've been
great
there,
and we're the best. And,
yeah, and you say to your VP of sales, so are we going to get those orders this month to hit my numbers? I feel good about it, you know?
Right.
And so the CEO is very isolated. And what we do is give them that kind of outer loop of where we go independently to his customers or her customers and get that information, which, as I say, you can't get it if I was directly involved with my customers because of the relationship. The interesting thing about the Net Promoter System too is that it's what we've talked about is the Net Promoter Score, but what makes the system work is that the feedback that Mark gets is so actionable. right? It's directly talking about the things that your frontline people need to do to change the customer experience. And so you then take that information and you get with your frontline people and you have to make those changes. So it's all operationally focused, but it's operations that ultimately ends up affecting the customer experience. So once we kind of lay out that whole journey to people in a speaking environment, most business owners are very interested to actually have it done for their companies. And we do focus purely on B2B. We don't do B2C because, you know, the tools you need to access tens and
well, C's are crazy anyway.
Yeah. So
now, how often do you, you do this one time and you're done, or do you have to do this like every week, every month, every year? How often do you, what's the rhythm of a good?
Yeah, we usually recommend that they do it once a year.
Uh-huh.
Once a year, because you're going to see how you're moving the needle.
And how many, do you need a certain number of customers to make it, the data reliable?
We have found over the companies that we've done that you need about 30 to 40 of your customers to get good data.
So so what's the profile? What size companies are your typical clients?
Well,
is it go by sales revenue, number of employees, number of customers?
It's basically more vertical. Professional services are great prospects for us.
Uh-huh.
You know, we've done media companies. You know, anybody that's in a B2B services industry is a great customer for us.
So like a law firm would be good?
Law firms would be great.
And they're okay calling their clients to see how they're doing?
Yeah, they are.
You've had a law firm say, yeah, call my clients.
Yeah, I've had a couple of attorneys that we've talked to that said,
We'd love to know. Call my client.
But no, it strikes me, if you're a CEO and you're going to do this, you can't be willing to do this and not be prepared.
Correct.
To make the changes in your business.
That's
to
right.
Now, you can't meet everybody's little whip stitch idea, you know, like mm-hmm. If they changed their logo,
right.
Boy, I'd double my business.
If they make it free,
right.
I would,
right. You know. But you can't ignore it. So a couple of questions. One, do you feedback any data at all in summary form to the people you're asking? Was one question. And then also, I bet it could get frustrating, or maybe it's even a discipline early on when you're talking to the senior exec. Look, if you're not prepared to do something behind this, then let's not play this game.
Don't even
That's an absolutely great point. I mean,
that was a fantastic point.
It was a brilliant point. It is. It's the crux of the whole matter, to be honest. If the CEO, if our client, the CEO, is not willing to act on the feedback, we advise them, don't do this. It doesn't mean that you have to go and do everything that the customers have asked for, but what we end up giving them is a list of, and there are recurrent themes, is what you find.
So what's an example of some of the themes?
Very often, for example, one client we had where there were issues in terms of execution of delivery of product, the wrong product being delivered.
But that's what you're looking for, is
just
patterns,
like,
now,
right?
Not
like
flyers,
like,
right?
Exactly.
You're looking for patterns.
Yeah, so in that case, what they wanted was better communication. You'd get things like, you know, I work with Roz and she's great, but I send emails and she doesn't respond, or she responds and says it's going to be taken care of and it isn't. What we find most of the time is these are not huge issues that companies
have to
address.
So it's like annoying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they call them small interventions, right? I mean, in the customer experience, make a huge difference. Because what drives loyalty ultimately is that the customer, it's not about flawless execution, which is what's interesting. It's about the customer wants to feel cared for more than anything else. So you can screw up, but clean it up and say, hey, I understand we made a mistake. That's not going to happen again. And then make sure it doesn't happen again. So those are the things that come up as the things we give back to the CEO, saying these are the things, these are the top five things that you need to do. We've heard it, you know, out of 30 interviews, it came up 11 times. Okay, so then what we have is the CEO then needs to go back to the people that we have interviewed and say, appreciate your feedback. It's been really being helpful. And these are the things that have been fed back to me that our customers would like to see improved. And here's the three things that I can do. And we're going to work on those this year. And we'll look forward to getting your feedback on how we're doing on those things. So that's closing the loop with your customers. And just the mere action of doing that deepens that relationship and drives up loyalty.
Well, I'll bet it does individually. But I also wonder if you couldn't leverage a platform like Attentively to go back to this whole customer group that you're trying to nurture and say, look, as many of you know, we've gone to great lengths to learn how we're doing. One of the things that we discovered is where there's a lot of room for improvement on bump, bump, and bump, and we want you to know we're going to invest some energy and resources in doing this. You could leverage a platform like yours.
Yeah, Roz, is that a place where they can use, like I know your service isn't exclusively a monitoring service, but you do monitor things, mm-hmm. and then you can pull kind of similar data that's their conversations that they're having in real time, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So some of our customers do that. One of the components of how they use the system is to listen for things that could be complaints. And because they're just listening to their own customer base, they can do very broad searches. So for example, you know, patchy service or something sucks, you know, they can do these kind of...
Right, but that would just give them more ammunition and make their report that much richer because mm-hmm. now you have kind of a social media element to your direct conversation.
Yeah, it's a great point. For example, some of our clients have very high net promoter scores, but they're not promoting that. They're not using that mm-hmm. to use as part of their messaging.
Yeah.
We had one company we did in Augusta, a steel company, who were considered by their clients to be the gold standard and the best engineers in terms of figuring out engineering solutions for structural steel, it turned out. But the owners of the company didn't really realize how well they were thought of. And so they've brought in a marketing person to do exactly that, is to take those verbatims from their customers that are singing their praises and use that in their marketing messages to drive up their
business.
Right,
they weren't appreciating how special they were.
Exactly, exactly.
So now, do you guys have some sort of a structured process to recruit, develop, and then deploy people with the skill set like Mark here? Because, I mean, even Lee and I could ask question number 1 and 2. But it's question 3 through 19 is you got to have the marks doing this thing, right?
Right, because that's the secret sauce to this, is having good people to ask the right questions, be good listener, and pay attention right. to the nuance of this, right?
Right. So typically they're, you know, sales professionals that have had a lot of relationships, that have a lot of interaction, a lot of human, capital. Those are really good people for us to, you know, make the phone call. And then a lot of times I listen in. And say, you could have asked this question here. You might want to drill down on this a little bit more. You know, if you hear this buzzword or this pain point, let's go back to that.
So what do you guys need more of now? Are you in growth mode? Do you need more clients, more people to, you know, ask the questions? Where are you at?
We're in growth mode. I mean, we've been doing it for about 3 years now, and we've got, you know, some great references, and we're just out there speaking and kind of, in a way, we want to kind of drink our own bathwater here and build it up through referrals, and that's what's happening. We're having companies say, hey, I heard you guys did this for so-and-so. You know, I'd like to talk to you about that. So, yeah, but we're definitely, I mean, we have plenty of capacity to take on more. And
are you looking to go, you don't, the clients don't have to be here in Atlanta, right? They can be anywhere.
No, we're doing business right now for a company in Anaheim, California. So it doesn't matter. It's all done by phone.
Yeah, right. It was actually a business here in Lawrenceville that acquired a company in Anaheim. And so they have new ownership, so they want to baseline their business.
Right.
They want us to go in and find out exactly what's going on with the customer so they can start to execute.
So you met them here in Lawrenceville, and then once they got bought, then it was logical for them to go.
Right. Right.
And then one of the CEOs we did the report for, when we delivered the report, he was a new CEO as well, put in by private equity. He got the report, he read it, and he said, all I need is this report. I have to do nothing else. I can execute from this report day one with all this customer feedback. There's so much gold in this report. Right. I know exactly what to do.
Now, is private equity a referral source for you? Because when they flip and put it in their own CEO, then that you need that baseline to get the lay of the land, right?
Not only that, but before they buy the company.
Oh, then that's their due diligence to make sure they're getting what they
buy. Right. So how would you like to know before you buy the company that your customer's net promoter score is in the 70 percentile and your customers are going to stay with you for the foreseeable future?
Even the seller of the company would want to know that, because if mine was in the 80 or 90 percentile, I would want to know
that too.
Right.
That's a marvelous application of the service.
Well, it is, because most private equity firms, and we actually met with a partner in a private equity firm a couple of months ago and showed him kind of what we can deliver in terms of the unique information. And, you know, his comment was that when they're evaluating deals, they look purely at financials. And he said, this information is so powerful compared to just trying to look at, you know, the last 3 years' results and where the business is trending, because it's all
because the
rear view mirror.
Right. And they don't show you the landmines.
They
like
do not.
Right. Exactly. They don't tell you that six of those customers that you think you got locked down, they're ready. They're shopping you.
Exactly.
Right. And they also don't show you there's a difference that Bain talks about is the good profits and the bad profits. You may be profitable, but how many of those profits are bad profits? You know, on your phone company, overage fees, baggage handling fees,
right.
All these little fees that take away from that customer experience. They may increase your bottom line.
Yeah, but
they
today they're increasing it, but they could be losing the customer tomorrow.
Right. That's why a lot of people are now talking that stock prices are going to be driven by loyalty and no longer by profit.
Right. Wow. If somebody went to learn more, website for you guys?
Yeah, www.pragmetrics, pragmetrix.com.
And then the pain point that they're having, what's the reason that they would call you?
Yeah, they need to be having some pain. They're losing customers. They don't know why they're losing customers. You know, sales are down.
Even if you just got surprised by a loss of a customer, that's probably a good trigger point for you guys, right?
Yeah, great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there needs to be usually some pain before they'll act.
Right. All right. Well, we appreciate you being part of the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.